Almost fear and cause confusion. I'll crash his board.
Hello, everyone. Welcome. Where am I? There I am. Sorry. Here I am. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Office Hours. I had two videos today. The pothole video was actually scheduled for 2 weeks' time, but Carl Benjamin badgered me via DM to release it now because he wanted pothole details. So I was basically bullied into releasing it early. Also kicking myself that I didn't, when I first mentioned about Starmer's pothole war, guy on Twitter, I forget his name now, made the joke, we will fight them on the A roads. We will fight them on the B roads. We will never surrender. And I wish I'd included that in the video. Oh, well. Hope everybody is doing fine. I'm on my second cigar of the day, which I'm not even sure what it is. I think it's an H Upman Majestic. I had a Connoisseur 1 earlier on. But this Majestic got a couple of years on it now, so it's starting to show itself. Very nice, actually. One of those cigars that is, you know, nicer than it should be given the price point, but yes. All right, so what is the big news then? Well, before we get going, I'll just, as people are trickling in, as ever, I'll remind people to buy courses, Foundations of Shakespeare, of course, Trivium, of course. I'll play an ad, and then when we are done with that, I'm going to talk about the Signal Leap, basically a massive screw up, or is it a massive screw up? So let's get going on this. Okay. Oh yeah. No, yeah, I'll actually play an ad. Hold on. Let's go with this one.
Academic Agency.
All right. So if you've missed it, the big news is that, basically this journalist, Jeffrey Goldberg, who is the editor of The Atlantic magazine, was accidentally added to a top-level security meeting that was taking place on Signal, right? Signal is an app, you know, like you're in WhatsApp or you're in group chat on Twitter or something. Well, Signal is the one that the apparently people in the top brass of the US government use. And somehow or other, a man called Michael Waltz accidentally, quote unquote, added Jeffrey Goldberg to this top secret chat where Pete Hegseth, J.D. Vance, and various other top members of Stephen Miller and various other members of the Trump admin were discussing bombing the Houthis. Now, this is one of those stories that, the media has gone absolutely wild on it, as we'll see. But it's one of those stories that doesn't quite pass the bullshit sniff test to me, right? How do you add somebody who is a libtard journalist accidentally to a top level security signal chat. Right, talk me through the process that that happens. You accidentally added this guy. How does that happen? So anyway, if Michael Waltz isn't fired by the time you watch this, or but you know, in the next 24 hours, you've got to ask some serious questions about what the hell Team Trump are doing, right? Yeah, it just happens. Yeah, Michael, what? I mean, it just happened in FDR's administration as well, where a man like Michael Waltz accidentally gave information to a man like Jeffrey Goldberg, you know, just so happens. If you ask me, I mean, my initial reaction was that, you know, the person who comes out like sort of the best from the MAGA point of view, when we look at the messages, I'll just show you the, I'll just show you what was leaked. This is the Atlantic magazine article by Jeffrey Goldberg. The guy who kind of comes out of it sort of okay from the base's perspective is J.D. Vance, because J.D. Vance is the only one asking. Let me just get down to the actual screenshots here. So Vance says, do you think we should go? We think we should do it. Let's go. I just hate bailing Europe out again, he says. Right. Yeah, because bombing the Houthis is about bailing Europe out. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, let's just go get past that. He says, let's just make sure our messaging is tight here. And if there are things we can do up front, such as minimizing risk to Saudi oil facilities, we should do it. Pete Hegseth, I fully share your loathing of European freeloading. It's pathetic. But Mike is correct. We are the only ones on the planet on our side of the ledger who can do this. Nobody else is even close. The question is timing. I feel like now is as good a time as any, given POTUS' directive to reopen the shipping lanes. I think we should go. But POTUS still retains 24 hours of decision space. This presumably is Miller, and then they keep on talking. And then there's another screenshot. There's Michael Waltz. You know, this is only a national security advisor, by the way, you know, an actual advisor to the president of America. And fist bump, American flag, flames. You know, they're talking about bombing the Houthis. You know, brilliant. I posted on Twitter earlier on, if there's one image that encapsulates the American government, it's a man called Michael Waltz posting that as some random place in the Middle East is bombed. Anyway, let's carry on. That was the kind of the extent of the revelations. And why is my immediate response to be skeptical about this, other than the logistics, the mechanics of actually how is something like this done, right? The reason is because as a lifelong pro wrestling fan, as someone who understands the mechanics of pro wrestling, okay, I know carny bullshit when I see it, okay? And this is actually the third, if you count it, the third time in quick succession that J.D. Vance has been involved in what I would describe as carny bullshit, okay? The first time was the rumble in the White House. That was carny. That was pure WWE. And it was designed, right, to get Vance in the headlines. The second bit of carny bullshit, you may have forgotten it because it happened more than 2 weeks ago, but I didn't, was this, right? Just watch this.
Well, we could have coordinated, I guess, but man, this is, I gotta be honest with you. By the way, I think the speech is gonna be great, but I don't know how you do this for 9 minutes.
The hardest thing was doing it during Biden, when the speech was a stupid campaign speech.
Right, this is all bollocks, basically, to get everybody talking about how J.D. Vance is on your side, how he's the only true one there, how he's more Trumpian than Trump, how he, you know, is to get, you know, your favorite social media influencer posting this stuff. It's a narrative, basically, that Vance is the real deal. Why are they doing this? Because Vance has been put in there by very moneyed interests, you know, the ones, Peter Thiel, etc., because they want him to be the successor to Trump. So every single time one of these news stories comes along, the headline or the person who's being pushed, to use a pro wrestling term, right, is J.D. Vance. Okay, Hulk Hogan's still the champion, but Vince wants to push Ultimate Warrior. Okay, and Vance is Ultimate Warrior. And just like the Ultimate Warrior, he doesn't quite have it. So he needs all of these artificial boosters. My immediate sense was, this has been leaked. The leak is real. That chat happened. But Vance wants you to see it. That was my sense. Now, other readings are available. Maybe this Michael Waltz is just a fuckwit, right? Maybe Michael Waltz is a libtard stooge who's there to undermine Trump, right? Maybe somebody's against Michael Waltz and wants to get Michael Waltz fired because he's a neocon, right? All of these are possibilities. But for me, we're all about pattern recognition. For me, the thing that comes out of all of these stories is, oh, there's J.D. Vance saying the exact thing that the MAGA base would want him to say. It didn't escape my attention that when Trump started bombing the Houthis, right, then the Houthis hadn't really been doing anything since the ceasefire, and Israel have cancelled their ceasefire, by the way, that was a moment where a lot of the Trump base, a lot of the MAGA faithful, started saying, oh, hold on a second, we didn't vote for this. So it's very convenient that a big story comes out that pushes two things at once, right? What are the two things that Vance wants out there? One, that he's true to the faithful, that he's, despite his reservations, he's going along, he's a team player, but ultimately he's more MAGA than even Trump is, right? That's the first thing he wants there for the base. The second thing for the international audience is the other part of the kayfabe, which has been a consistent feature of the Carney bullshit surrounding J.D. Vance, which is basically to get heel heat from the Europeans, okay? Because the storyline being pushed at the moment is USA versus Europe. It is to put pressure on the European leaders to up their game and to increase their military spending, which they're all doing, by the way, okay? But the play is, as per Pete Hegseth's plan, to use anti-Trump sentiment in Europe in order for Europe to start paying for its own defense, as per the division of labor plan outlined by the RAND Institute and by Brian Beletic many, many times. Okay. And this is basically, you know, hand in glove with all of the other things they've been doing. Now, I don't know, right, if that is the play, I don't know whether it's currently backfiring, because honestly, this makes Team Trump look like amateur hour. It makes them look like a bunch of cowboys who conduct their business on a Slack chat using emojis when they're talking about really serious things like military strategy. And they're employing people with such little OPSEC, with such little regard for what they're doing, that they just by accident add the editor of an international magazine who's actually ostensibly their political enemy to a top secret meeting. Brilliant. So, I mean, I think the net effect is basically, I mean, my ultimate response is I'm fed up with this. I'm fed up of MAGA, fed up of Trump, fed up of all of it. Okay. Also, Hegseth was asked by a journalist, and this was his answer.
Share how your information about war plans against the Houthis in Yemen was shared with a journalist in The Atlantic, and were those details classified?
You're talking about a deceitful and highly discredited so-called journalist who's made a profession of peddling hoaxes time and time again, to include the hoaxes of Russia, 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 or the fine people on both sides hoax, or suckers and losers hoax. So this is a guy that peddles in garbage. This is what he does. I would love to comment on the Houthi campaign because of the skill and courage of our troops. I've monitored it very closely from the beginning. And you see, we've been managing 4 years of deferred maintenance under the Trump administration. Our troops, our sailors were getting shot at as targets. Our ships couldn't sail through. And when they did shoot back, it was purely defensively or at shacks in Yemen. President Trump said, no more. We will reestablish deterrence. We will open freedom of navigation. And we will ultimately decimate the Houthis, which is exactly what we're doing as we speak from the beginning, overwhelmingly.
Why were those details shared on Signal? And how did you learn that a journalist was privy to the targets, the types of weapons used?
I've heard I was characterized. Nobody was texting war plans. And that's all I have to say about that.
So again, pretty carny bullshit answer, if you ask me. You know, just a bullshit answer. Why didn't he just say, look, you know, yeah, it's true, but we didn't really discuss anything. Instead, he was like, oh, you try to make it sound like a hoax. He went on to Russia bullshit and he attacked this Jeffrey Goldberg. I mean, in fairness to Jeffrey Goldberg, right, he may be a libtard and he may be from a certain background and so on, but he actually redacted bits of the story that he considered to be security critical. He actually redacted parts of it that he thought that might actually reveal things that the US military were planning. So that answer there by Hegseth was basically a bluster and a lie, right? Why is this a problem? Why is all of this a problem? It's a problem because the reason that people voted for Donald Trump, the reason people became MAGA is because they were fed up of politicians. They wanted authenticity. Trump told it like it is. He wasn't corrupt like all the rest of the swamp. He wasn't part of the Washington machine. And they were fed up of all of this. But now MAGA, unfortunately, have, via the process of the iron law of oligarchy, I mean, that was basically a politician's answer from Hegseth. Anyway, if indeed, by the way, this is a genuine, a genuine quote unquote leak that they don't want out there, I get the impression they do want it out there for the reasons that I outlined. Okay. And I'm getting like, you know, call me curmudgeonly, friends, but I kind of get fed up of feeling like I'm being worked, right? That they're treating you like a mark. That this movement, this Trump thing, right? It feels increasingly just like a scam every single time I see anything out of them now. Not just a sham, an active scam, okay? And I'm not even going to go into, you know, the shitcoin and the fleecing and the, you know, some of the scummy stuff that has happened, you know, the campaign raising and how they managed to turn everything somehow into some sort of grift. So anyway, I thought, what is the best way for me to cover this story after getting my initial theories out of the way? And I thought the best way of approaching it, and I put out a tweet earlier on, I said, I once wrote an article where I predicted that MAGA one day would become as annoying, if not more annoying, than the SJWs, okay? And for me, that day came yesterday, right? It was come in the past 24 hours, where I've just had enough of them. And I feel like there's a collective moment where a lot of people are like, right, enough of this shit now, okay? Not just from the actual team. I'm not talking about Trump himself. I'm talking about like all of these ancillary characters, the Vances and so on, trying to get themselves over with the crowd. I'm not just talking about them, though. I'm actually talking about, like, you know, people replying to me on Twitter, the actual followers and so on. There's only so much bullshit I can put up with. And my window of tolerance is only, you know, they talk about a cup of tolerance, right? And you can fill up that cup with water and once in a while you can take a swig of it or so on. But eventually that cup starts flowing over. For me, that moment has come, right? This week, I've just had enough of it. So I thought, well, what better way to approach this than by finding the most loathsome people I can possibly find who are upset about it, who are libtards, and then see if that can sway me back onto the you know, being a bit more pro-MAGA than I am at the minute. So I've picked the worst shitlib I can possibly think of, and that is LBC's very own James O'Brien. So we're going to watch a little bit of James O'Brien together, and I'm going to see if my natural loathing for O'Brien can, you know, bring me back on to seeing any good in these fuckwits who work for Trump. So let's have a watch of this.
As I dread the most. Well, that's not true. I don't know what the mornings I dread the most are, but at least we can get our teeth into this tale. I suppose the morning...
There he is, the dog-faced gremlin. Slovenly. Could have made an effort, James. Anyway, let's carry on.
The mornings I dread the most would be the mornings where there is no news. What the hell are we going to talk about? Parking tickets. I don't know. But I haven't had one of those.
Potholes, James.
Those for a very long time. You still get slow news days, and you still get days when the news is packed with stories and events that don't actually lend themselves particularly well to the time that we spend together every morning. Time that I cherish and value more with each passing year, to be honest with you. But the kind of reason why I dread the story we're going to discuss first this morning is because it speaks to a much deeper malaise, doesn't it? I'm pretty close to saying, how do we deal with a story like this in a world where it doesn't matter?
And I'm, you see, here's the thing, friends. I agree with him. This is the horrible thing. I also agree with him. Like, nothing matters. This is a story now. In a couple of days, it won't matter. I've got a video coming out next week called Is Donald Trump a Time Lord? Right? I'm not kidding, where I'm talking about exactly this phenomenon. Anyway, let's carry on.
Oh, boy. There goes the shiver. How do we deal with a story like this in a world where it doesn't matter? And, of course, in brackets, it should matter so much. It just should. Now, one colleague of mine, off air, is touchingly, I would say, perhaps even naively optimistic that this really matters, that this will matter at least a bit.
I love it. We've got to the point where James O'Brien is nothing ever matters. Nothing ever happens posting.
Between you and me, they've just had some time off, so I think they've come back a little bit detoxified, detarnished by the cynicism of covering this stuff every day. But the idea that senior members, up to and including the actual vice president, could be discussing incredibly sensitive military material on a chat app is bad enough. The fact that they accidentally included a prominent journalist in the conversation is, I mean, I would like to say beyond belief.
It is beyond belief. That's because it didn't happen, by the way. I'm sorry, I just refuse to believe that can happen. What is the precise mechanism? The guy's name is Jeffrey Goldberg, right? It's not like you're working on a notepad document and you accidentally slip and you hit close, right, without saving the file, or you accidentally switch your computer off or something. Right. In order, I mean, I don't know how Signal works, but presumably you have to drag the name across or you have to click on something to add somebody to the group. How do you do that by accident? Anyway, let's carry on.
One journalist describes it thus. There are few U.S. presidential actions more sensitive, more fraught with peril than when and where to use American military force. If such information were obtained by American adversaries in advance, it could put lives and national foreign policy objectives.
I mean, imagine Jeffrey Goldberg was a spy. I mean, I've read a few things about Jeffrey Goldberg. He may well be a spy, by the way. But you know what I'm saying, right? Like, that could have been anybody. Like, imagine all of the people who that could have been on the Rolodex of this Mike Waltz. You know, I've accidentally added Chuck Schumer or something. Like, I mean, this is basically what this is, you know? Just bizarre.
At risk. As far as we know, this group chat with information about an impending US strike in Yemen. I want to make that clear. It was impending. It hadn't happened yet. As far as we know, it did not fall into the wrong hands. And we can be fairly confident of that because the targets didn't seem to have any idea what was incoming. It doesn't mean that other enemies of our interests, a category into which we increasingly have to consider inserting the United States of America. But we don't know.
I mean, is he wrong, though? Is he wrong? I remember a certain little Mexican fella made a post about a week ago saying the libtards are right, basically. And I've had chats with genuine people now who are pretty considered on the right, private chats, where basically we've been like, maybe the libtards are right. I mean, is he wrong at this point? Anyway, let's carry on.
What other enemies of the United States' interests might have had or managed to get their hands on the encrypted conversation? Unfortunately for the Trump administration, Jeffrey Goldberg, an influential political journalist and editor-in-chief of the Atlantic magazine...
I just want to repeat again. He's not just like the editor-in-chief of the Atlantic was accidentally added to a group chat where they were talking about bombing Yemen. Oh, fucking hell. Every day, I don't think things can get much more insane. I mean, there are so many things just in this past week I could have done this video about, okay? I could have done the video, right? I mean, Trump has repeated that he wants Canada to be the 51st state. He has repeated threats against Denmark over Greenland, right? He just mentioned in passing that he's open to the US joining the Commonwealth if King Charles asked him to. Didn't they have a fucking war in 1777 over that exact issue? Oh, but yeah, it's fine. America might just join the Commonwealth now. Here you go. Here's a rainbow flag. Come to the games. I mean, what the fuck? I could have done a story on the fact that Tucker Carlson interviewed a man who has become one of the top negotiators for America, who's literally just Trump's random golf buddy from New York, who is now like the top envoy of America, a man called Steve Witkoff, who during the course of that interview, I thought the interview was going pretty well, right? But then during that interview, okay, and I'm not even making this up. I sound like James O'Brien, but this is how mental things are. During that interview, right, about three quarters of the way in, I thought, well, this is going pretty well for him. I kind of like this guy. He said, I have to tell you something, Tucker. When I saw Putin, he gave me a portrait that he had commissioned of Donald Trump. And he told me that on the day of the assassination, he went to a church and he prayed for our president. And Tucker Carlson went, amen. And I was like, fucking hell. Jesus. I just can't. I mean, I couldn't. I was going to do the video on that today. But then this happened. I could have done the video on America joining the Commonwealth. But then this happened. I could have done the video on the mental thing with Canada or Greenland again. It's just, and the ultimate thing is, none of it matters. This is the thing. These are mental, mental things happening every single day, and it also just doesn't matter. Anyway, let's carry on.
Was accidentally included in the chat by the White House National Security Advisor, Michael Waltz. I mean, where do you start? Where do you start? With the job description, I think. What's your job there, Mike?
I mean, people saying like, oh, you're too cynical, AA. You're too cynical. You're only negotiating with the Kremlin, a man who is a former KGB agent and one of the wiliest operators in the world. And you're falling for like a two-bit manipulative move like, oh, yeah, I gave him a painting and he prayed. And that's like delivered straight to Tucker's MAGA audience as if like, yeah, Putin's a great guy, guys. He's a great guy. You know? I mean, Jesus. Anyway, let's carry on.
National Security Advisor. What did you do? I kind of accidentally included a journalist in the most sensitive conversation that I've had this year so far. You did what, mate? And the job description, National Security Advisor. I mean, do you see what I mean? How do you do this in a world where it doesn't matter? I said to Eleanor earlier that Donald Trump will come out and attack the Atlantic magazine. And she said to me, he already has.
I don't get it. You're making a lot out of this. There's a bloke in the chat. Have you ever heard of human error? Human error? I am the National Security Advisor to the President of America. And I just accidentally add a shitlib journalist, who's not just any journalist, but the editor-in-chief of the Atlantic magazine, to the group chat? Human error. Fucking hell.
How do you do this in a world where it doesn't matter? Let's consider for a moment not just the content, but also the tone of these exchanges. They sound like, can I say this, in a post-adolescence world? We may talk about adolescence later in the program, but they sound like incels.
Oh, God. I thought this was a good idea, that I could deal with the dual level of at once can't stand MAGA, but now he's going to talk about adolescence and incels. I don't think I can handle it. Might just jump out of the window.
Talking about girls in the sixth form. The kind of really sort of second-rate blokish banter of the style is, I mean, almost beyond belief. And the insults to their closest allies, the huge insult to Europe. J.D. Vance coming perilously close to sounding as if he regrets the fact that we defeated the Nazis together in the 1940s.
I'm just going to stay muted.
Describing that extraordinary act of international solidarity as an exercise in bailing out, something that he doesn't want to do again or that he actually regrets. That's the point, isn't it? That's the point. How do you do this in a world where it won't matter, where Donald Trump, more than the people around him, more than the people caught up in this scandal, has created an ecosystem in which nothing matters?
It's crazy, isn't it? Can you imagine what Trump is going to say when he's asked about this? Oh, I know Mike. He's a great guy. He's the best guy. Yeah. Oh, I don't know anything about that. This is the first time I'm hearing anything about it. Anyway, let's talk about tariffs or something. That's how Trump will deal with it. You know Trump is like that.
Nothing matters. There will be more people, and correct me if I'm wrong in the usual way, 0345 6060973, there will be more people in America concerned about a lie involving Haitians eating cats and dogs. They're eating the pets. There will be more people excited by that lie than there will be by what must be the most egregious national security breach that you can think of from the very top of your head. Even the occasional Republican has finally found their testicles, with Don Bacon, a congressman from Nebraska, saying that the action was unconscionable. None of this should have been sent on non-secure systems. Russia and China are surely monitoring his unclassified phone. Speaker of the House of Commons, Mike Johnson, characteristically tried to downplay one of the worst imaginable transgressions of normality undertaken by his colleagues, saying they'll tighten up and make sure it doesn't happen again. I don't know what else you can say about that. What else can you say about that? 0345 6060973. What else can you say about that? Well,
I mean, it is amateur hour, isn't it? If it's legit, it's amateur hour. You see, even worse, I think it's not legit. So it's both of these things at once. It is at once amateur hour and carny bullshit at the same time. It's terrible. This is the most I've ever... I mean, you know, ignoring some of the shitlib stuff he said, like mentioning incels, adolescents, and Haitians eating dogs already. This is the most I've ever agreed with James O'Brien on anything.
I think we should tell him. I think we should tell the Republican Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, what else we can say about that. What else we can say about the fact that the most senior members of Donald Trump's administration appear to hold the whole of Europe in contempt. There's a debate about policy. There's a discussion about operational details.
See, I don't even understand this part of it, right? They're not bombing Yemen for the benefit of Europe. Right? The framing here is claiming that because 40% of European trade goes through the Suez Canal, that the Houthis are, you know, the bombing of the Houthis is being done for Europe's benefit, okay? Obviously a lie. I mean, I don't know if they think that or if they intended for the base to see this or they intended to wind up people like James O'Brien. But this is not why they're bombing the Houthis. They're not doing it to secure trade routes for European ships. For one thing, the Royal Navy is there, which sends envoys with British ships. The French Navy is there, which sends envoys with French cargo. So European Navy is in the Red Sea, or is down there, basically, helping out. And the Houthis aren't attacking those. They're not targeting those. The Houthis are specifically targeting American vessels because of their support for what the Israelis are doing in Gaza. The Houthis had stopped doing the ceasefire, and they started back up when the Israelis started back up, you know, started their killing back up. You know, the ceasefire has ended as far as I can see, and the fighting is back on. So it's not happening. I mean, they want to talk about freeloaders all the time, but they never really want to talk about those the freeloaders in that special little country in the Middle East, right? They'd rather talk about some imaginary world where Americans are paying for like German healthcare or something, you know, ignoring the fact that Germany has been occupied since 1945. I saw a post from Morgoth, which he put out last night, which kind of summed it up well. Let me see if I can find that post. You know, this idea that you know, I mean, let me just share this post from Morgoth. Freeloading Europeans made us do this. There's all the American bases. One in here in Blighty, Thatcher did that. Thanks to Maggie. One in Ireland, look. I mean, they've got bases all that, you know, that's basically what an empire is. So you can't stick your armies in an occupied country like Germany and then accuse the people of freeloading off you. And it's made all especially more disgusting from my point of view when you consider all the awful shit they've done to the Germans since 1945. Including one of the most brutally kind of sadistic psychological warfare operations of all time. If you don't know about that, I've got a video called What Yuri Bezmenov Didn't Tell You, one of my most watched ever videos, where I go through, you know, the psychological reprogramming that they took the Germans through. So it's really very dark to, you know, do that. And they did it in West Germany. They didn't, like, the Soviets didn't do this sort of shit in the East Germany. That's why the East Germans are voting AfD now. They did it in West Germany. It's it's really very dark when you consider why those troops are there in the first place. Right? This is not a kind of dependency that was asked for by Europe. Basically, Europe lost the Second World War. That's why the Americans are there. And again, I've got so many books here that I can point you to that talk you through step by step, not just the psychological warfare that was taken place, but the economic warfare that took place, including a reconstruction of the entire way business was done in Europe after 1945. I mean, I've mentioned this book many times, Exporting the American Model by Jellick, where they used martial aid after World War II in order to reconfigure European economies along American corporate lines. I've got a book here called America Conquers Britain by L. Denny. That was written in the 1930s, even before World War II. And it tells the tale of how American business interests used various different measures after World War I, when Britain was in debt, to buy up all of the companies, to buy up British business interests, for American profit and American interest. Okay, I mean, this is the nature of empire. I'm just saying, like, you know, and oh, sorry, I accidentally muted myself. I got too carried away and I pulled my mic out. Sorry about that. But this is one of the paradoxes when it comes to this topic, right? Because at the same time, right, there are three separate narratives I see. There are three separate narratives I see these people run. One is the freeloading narrative. The second is the, oh, well, we're you're the vassal, so you just do what you're told type thing, right? And the third one, and the most mental one, is that secretly this is all the British anyway. I'll deal with that one in a future video. I'm going to record a video with a buddy of mine who's got a lot to say about it, Horace, who's looked into some of these theories about how secretly, you know, the Bank of England secretly runs the American Empire and all this absolute wank. So they run these three narratives all at the same time. And it's like a kind of paradox. It's like, oh, if you want to do anything about it, if you want to spend on your own military, then, you know, you're warmongers. If you want to say anything about it, then, you know, you're blaming everybody else's problems on someone else. And it's like, actually, the reality is that this has just been a straightforwardly coercive relationship since World War II, right? Which is in the nature of hegemony. It's in the nature of hegemony. And, you know, frankly, I've seen more disgusting comments from Americans towards Canadians, towards Europeans, towards Brits in the past day than I've ever seen from Chinese, from Russians, from Ash Sakar, from SJWs. I've never seen anywhere near as much hatred and just outright kind of bloodlust, kind of psycho fantasies of violence, basically, than I've seen in the past day or so. But anyway, let's carry on and listen to Shitlib James O'Brien.
About the impending US military strike. And there is, if you want to be journalistic about it, an extraordinary, unique indeed, insight into how Trump's senior national security team works. Amazing job! Waltz wrote to the group just minutes after the strikes on the Houthi targets in Yemen took place on Saturday, the 15th of March. And then, I don't know, maybe it's my age. And then some emojis. A fist, no less. A flag, inevitably. And a fire. As if the stupidest person you can find on social media was posting about an event of international importance.
I mean, he's right, isn't he? He's actually right, though. This is the problem. Like, is this what you wanted when you put your cross in there for Trump? Is what you wanted your foreign policy to be run by a guy called Michael Waltz? Fist pump emoji, American flag, fire. That's what you wanted, was it? Was it?
But happens to be the national security advisor. The emojis, well, we shall see what comes of that. But the content of the conversation, there's three things going on here. The content of the conversation, the context of the conversation, and the error, the question of competence, the competence of the conversation. I'm presuming in this introduction that you've seen all of it, but I'll probably share some more details with you shortly. The most important is, I'm not sure the president is aware how...
Right, I've had enough of O'Brien now. I've had enough of him. I do have another LBC-er who's... So on LBC, if you can imagine, they've got O'Brien, who's like a shit lib. But then before him, they've got Nick Ferrari, who's a bit more of a kind of like conservative, tells it like it is, kind of geezer. Nick Ferrari, I think he does the breakfast time, and then this twat comes on. So let's have a look at Nick Ferrari's reaction.
Dwyer. And Dr. Dwyer is a lecturer on information security at the Royal Holloway University of London, joining me now. Let's focus on your expertise in that area of information security. What's happened here? Is it literally just someone bringing in the wrong party? Good morning.
Good morning. And yeah, absolutely extraordinary. But yes, someone, in this case, Mike Waltz, who's the National Security Advisor, added Jeffrey Goldberg, the editor of The Atlantic, into that chat, like we all do when we might add a friend to a group chat accidentally and then talk about something we don't want them to know.
Like, you go in on LBC, Andrew, you could have dressed up, you could have, like, you know, gone in front of your bookshelf if you've got any books. Like, he looks like he's, I don't know what he looks like, but this is a very shabby setup for Andrew.
Exactly the same thing has happened here, but on a completely different level.
This is your bread and butter. How am I saying it's roughly the same security as, I don't know, Signal? Is it roughly the same as a WhatsApp group? And I'm in a number of those. Is it broadly speaking the same, Andrew?
So Signal is regarded as one of the most secure platforms. So a bit more secure than what WhatsApp is. It's what journalists use frequently.
But it's still commercially available. It's not like a top secret CIA product or something like that.
No, it's commercially available. It's what we call end-to-end encrypted, so no one can see.
I mean, what if it was all an advert for Signal? Does, like, Peter Thiel have shares in Signal or something? Maybe he's a big advert for Signal. I don't know. I'm just trying to rationalize how the hell this happened.
Your messages, not Signal and no one else in between as well. So in many ways, it's very secure, but our phones aren't 100% secure. So people might have access to our phones and then see what's going on. So it is not equivalent to a CIA grade communication tool.
So why don't they use a CIA grade information tool? Why are they using this commercial app? It's a good question. I mean, this isn't the first time though. Do you remember Liz Truss one? Job done. Do you remember that? Job done. That was another leak of this nature.
Noting it's high level within the idea of groups, and the one I've got with my family and my children is, you know, much lower level. I buy that. But we're talking about plans to bomb a hostile country on that kind of communication tool. Your take on that?
Well, it's just frankly crazy and extraordinary that that was even possible or allowed. They shouldn't be using these type of platforms for that type of communication. And it looks like it might have broken several US federal laws to do that, because you're sharing the most sensitive information, as was on Jeffrey Goldberg's clip there. Actually, that has potential implications for US lives, sharing that information. That should not be even on a phone. There are special units that the US government has where they go into a room to discuss that information. That does not belong on a mobile phone, and especially not on a group chat.
Enjoyed our time together. Thank you. I've learnt a lot. Dr. Andrew Dwyer, and every day should be a school day. Dr. Andrew Dwyer, you're a lecturer on information security at the Royal Holloway University of London. Well, there's that aspect of it, which is the incomprehensibility of discussing effectively war plans, or certainly bombing plans, not even war plans, let's go not too far, but bombing plans, on a network, on a group, whatever you want to call it, such as that. The stupidity of involving a journalist. But let's go to the substance of what one of them says. VP, as in Vice President J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance, I fully share your loathing of European freeloading. It's, capitals, pathetic. That shows what they think of the UK and the rest of Europe, doesn't it? But hold on a second. When you look at the pitifully low amounts of money that much of Europe spends towards the defence of NATO, actually, it is pretty pathetic, isn't it? Have you ever inadvertently been included in one? How important are they?
So, you see, do you see the little dual game, right? Nick Ferrari's coming at this from the British right as opposed to from the left. And it is basically furthering the end of everybody upping their defence budget. Obviously, Starmer's already increased the defence budget by, you know, 0.3% or whatever it was, you know, to make it 2.7. The German Chancellor, you know, is increasing the defense budget. So maybe this is all part of that overall strategy to get that message out there. The media are certainly taking it seriously, as you can see, because it's basically the only story anybody's talking about today.
Are they the only way you find that you manage to talk to your children, your mate, your circle of friends? Is that how you plot what you're going to do this afternoon? Let's all meet up in whatever, Cafe Nero, Starbucks, whatever, eat, if it still exists. Let's have a coffee, let's do this, let's go to a restaurant. So let's go to the pub. Who wants to see a movie tonight? What do you fancy on the weekend? Anybody want to... Weather's getting better. Anybody want to go and have some fishing? Want to go fishing? Want to take the boat out? Let's go to a restaurant. What you don't discuss is, shall we bomb some Houthis? That's what you wouldn't put on that sort of chat. Phil's in Penrith. Phil, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Let's listen to some random members of the British public before I hit some super chats here. See how people are feeling about this.
Nick, again.
Good to have you on.
Mate, these are the people who are in, who are connected to the responsibility of nuclear weapons.
Ultimately, yep, yep.
And
you're right.
A patch on John Bolton.
Sorry?
John, the chap you had on yesterday, Mr. Bolton.
Oh.
Not a patch on John Bolton. Jesus. What do you do when you hate everybody? This is the problem.
Yes, I'm afraid I didn't. Yes, I remember him. Yes. What did he say?
He spoke a lot of sense, and he was a man worth listening to.
Right. Well, you'll have to summarise what he said for me.
I can't do that. Well, he's very realistic about his attitude towards Russia and the way Trump is creeping to Putin at the moment. He's embarrassed by it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I hear that. What about what the... I'm calling the defence secretary. Pete Hegseth says Europe. The loathing of European countries freeloading. It's pathetic. He's right there, isn't he?
We all need each other, Nick.
Well,
they sound as if they don't want us as friends to me.
Well, most of Europe, or a lot of Europe, doesn't even pay 2% of its GDP, let alone the 2.5 or 3% that President Trump should be. So they don't. Spain. 1.28%, Luxembourg, 1.9%, Belgium, 1.3%, Canada, 1.3%. I know Canada's not in Europe. Italy, 1.47%. I could go on. They're right. Much of it is pathetic, isn't it?
Get them to pull their socks up.
How?
We all need each other. We really do. I think we're at war at the moment, and we need each other.
How does the US need an organisation that doesn't pay, effectively doesn't pay its bill for insurance?
They've got to be embarrassed into paying it, haven't they? They've got to be shown about what a load of cheapskates they are. Let's hear it.
Well, he says that. They are cheapskates, but they still don't check. He called them out. He actually said that this is wrong and that he didn't almost encourage Russia to invade some of these countries.
So you see how the coverage comes out? They've basically got that talking point on through Nick Ferrari, and this is actually what's being pushed. Something the government is already doing, by the way, in this country. And, you know, you get old John Bolton fan from Newcastle or wherever to ring in, you know, oh, we all need to be together. And then he can go back to NAFO posting on Twitter. So love it when a plan comes together. I'll give a couple more minutes on this and then we'll hit some super thanks and super chats.
They don't care. So it is pathetic, Phil.
It's frightening, isn't it? The whole thing frightens me at the moment. I look at the situation with the nuclear weapons, and the whole thing frightens me. Somebody's going to do something silly one of these days, you know.
Well, I hope you're... Well, it depends what you define by something silly, but I hope you're wrong with that gloomy forecast. Phil, thank you. David's in Walthamstow. David, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
What can you tell me?
I think you're going overboard. As far as the Europeans have been basically funding America's military infrastructure, or the factories, the military hardware. You know, like, for example, the F-35, the fighter jet?
Right. Go on,
Are you aware about of this fighter jet?
I've heard, I don't have intimate knowledge. Obviously, I've heard of it, but I don't have intimate knowledge. What are you going to tell me about it?
Well, it's the new latest.
Yeah, now, apparently, yes.
Canada and Portugal... Germany, quite a lot of the European countries are now going to shelve it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is worrying America because of the billions and billions of income that's going to be lost.
Right, right.
Now, this is how you've got to remember, effectively, there's always two sides to every story. And America are now very, very worried about Donald Trump's attitude and the way that they've been talking to the Europeans, because our budget is bigger than any budget around the world. So therefore,
who's the UK, United Kingdom?
No, the European budget.
Right. But
Germany has just literally freed up $1 trillion in military hardware spending.
Right. None of the countries pay as much as the United States. But not even percentage. Hold on, none of them match percentage-wise. Indeed, the majority of them.
No, they don't, because they don't have their dollar, which has been made the gold.
So that is pathetic. So the United States continues to effectively provide insurance cover, if you will, through NATO, and many, not all, but actually, hang on, at least just under half.
Maybe our caller here is about to pull out his old Michael Hudson. Like, excuse me, Nick, you understand what the advantage is of being the dollar, the dollar being the reserve currency means that the Americans can basically infinitely print money and push their bonds and their treasury bonds on other countries. Is he going to say that? Doubt it somehow, but let's have a look.
Don't pay the dues. That's pathetic.
Nick, that's agreed, but you deal with it through diplomacy. You don't deal with it through shouting.
It's what Phil said. President Eisenhower. President Eisenhower said, "Don't take Americans for fools." In the 1960s, they have waited 60 years for not the United Kingdom, not Poland, not some countries, but a lot of Europe to actually pay the right amount, and they never have.
Okay,
and it is
so
pathetic.
Nick. Okay, you're speaking like that now. Let's see how you're going to speak when all this European money that's going to be spent in Europe, not in America, all this military hardware, let's see then whether they're going to be saying the same thing. They'll be begging Europe to be coming back and spending money on their fight.
Right, I can't do this anymore. I'm losing brain cells, people. I'm losing brain cells. All right, let's hit some super thanks here. So on last week's Office Hours, this was when I was reading Mad Lad Medvedev's insane tweets. C123 said, "One day it will come out that Medvedev was secretly the sly sneak to Putin's AA all along. Insipid world leaders like Macron, Trudeau, etc. are Putin's bullying victims, just as Mark is for AA." Paulins Ford. This was on my video. "Is Trump deliberately causing a recession?" Spoilers, people. No. Excellent reality check. Thank you very much for that, Paul. Dan Tubbs. Hello, Dan. On the same video says, there is, in my view, some truth in the post. This was in the 4chan post I was ripping apart in that video. He says the US has $10 trillion in COVID debt to roll over in the next 12 months. And the DXY dollar is too high. They need the dollar down, which eases global funding requirements, which will help lift liquidity and help ease remaining objections to lowering rates. This has the effect of a short-term dollar asset rotation. Scott Bessent talked about this before he was nominated. I don't think the post is truth. It is adjacent to the truth. It is, however, temporary, and I expect markets much higher towards the end of the year, says Dan Tubbs. So there is Dan. Well, he is the finance bro, so I'll defer to him on that topic. You can go back and watch that video where I basically poo-poo the idea that Trump is deliberately causing a recession. I don't think he is at all. And in fact, one of the things I talked about in that video was the tariffs. Tariff day is coming next week. It's April the 2nd. And if you have a look at the headlines, Trump is doing what he always does, backing down, revising it down, making it smaller, making them less sweeping, making them less radical, because he knows that the US economy is not going to be able to take a shock like the shock that something like that is going to do. Studio Rainer says, this is on what on earth is Keir Starmer doing, pledging troops to Ukraine. He says, Russia is a great reason to have hope, since Russia can cut those internet cables. If they want to digitalize their citizens' data, then all an enemy will need to do is to cut some cables and the plan falls apart. Is it quite as easy as that? What about that Elon Musk thing up in the sky? That Starlink or whatever it's called, that's internet, isn't it? This is on Deepest Law, an old episode of Deepest Law, the Gold Coast and the Independence of Ghana, reviewing Adam Curtis, episode 9, I think it was. Thanks, says CGT. Well, thank you very much, sir. What on earth is Keir Starmer doing pledging troops to Ukraine? Pemp in a Row says, have you seen the photo of Peter Mandelson celebrating his birthday with Jeffrey Epstein? I saw it in a Charles Johnson Substack talking about how the two have spent a lot of time together. Well, it's one big club, isn't it? I'm sure he was in those circles. Alphonse rides again, although knowing Peter Mandelson, there was probably not any underage girls involved, or any girls at all. Alphonse rides again, says, and this is on the video from earlier today, which was when I featured Tom Jones's article from the Substack on how Pakistani clan structure is impacting on British politics. He says, the clan dynamic is so ingrained in Pakistani life, it even extends to the national cricket team. They have some of the best players in the world, but they only get picked depending on which clan is in charge of the management. Crazy way to run things, but normal in large parts of the world. Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the things. Remember I did that whole series, the Economic Policies That Ruin series? The truth is, the ultimate cause of all of them was this using the government or using power positions solely to benefit your specific tribe or clan as against all the others. Art Dinoism says, pay the Dane geld and get the Dane. Isn't it funny that our elites have facilitated the organizational networks of migrants, yet suppress the primary organizational unit of native Europeans, the unified nation state? Yeah, absolutely, Art Dino. But not only have they taken away those, but what about all of the other mechanisms that working men and working women used to use, like unions, for example, smashed. The working man's club, gone. You know, all of those intermediary institutions that John Gray talked about in that False Dawn book, all of those are gone. But all of those are potential ways of organizing at a ground level. And this is why they utterly posed the church as well, because another place where people can organize is church, right? Churches have always been great units of political organization. But of course, that's been decimated and posed and cucked as well. So, yeah, they take away basically all avenues of that. But yet, they don't do the same thing to the local mosque, as an example, which is also a place where people can organize. So, and the pub, of course, the pub, there's been an assault on that. They're closing down everywhere. The smoking ban, the outdoor smoking ban, the Starmer U-turned on. You know, they don't like people meeting up. Gentlemen's clubs, all of these things, slowly but surely, they take them all away. Where do they actually want you? Instead of meeting up in the pub, or going to church, or meeting up in real life, where do they want you? They want you on Twitter, where they can see you. They want you on Twitter, where they can see you. That's where they want you. So that's it for the super thanks. Let's have a look at the super chats. I've accidentally shut entropy. Hold on. Oh, bloody bleeming Nora. I've shut entropy. I'm going to open it again. Hold on. How did I manage that? Right, I'm going to have to open it again. Hold on. And then we'll do the entropy super chats, and then we'll do the other ones. Continue. Here we go. Gexit in 79 says, did you watch Hans Hermann Hoppe's recent Mises Institute presentation slamming our greatest allies in the Middle East and Mele in an hour? It was pretty based. No, but I did see him talk about that a while back when he was slamming Mele. So maybe it's an update or it's the same talk I saw before. But I did see the old one. Coney says, from Marg Bar America, the former IDF prison guard turned journalist for The Atlantic, who peddled Iraq WMD lies and has been a stenographer for war criminals his whole career, was not, quote unquote, accidentally added to the war planning group chat. Come on. Absolutely agree, 100%, Coney. If you have a look into that, Goldberg. I mean, it's the fact that he was added by this Michael Waltz character. I mean, obviously those guys know each other. He's got him on speed dial, right? Even though one's a conservative and one's a liberal, yeah, it doesn't really matter. And The Atlantic in particular, you know, The Atlantic magazine, that was where I found that guy, Leon Weissleiter, years ago, who opened my eyes up on a whole bunch of issues. Coney says, on the subject of China, I don't see her as a paper tiger or on the path to replace the US as a global hegemon. It has enormous regional poverty, but incredible ship and aircraft building capacity. I see it like Japan at the beginning of the 90s. It's had enormous leaps and bounds in terms of development, but there's been an awful lot of malinvestment in the economy. It's likely to ride another big wave of growth, but it's probably strong enough to take Taiwan in 4 years' time. I've been reading Mia Shima recently, his book, The Tragedy of Great Power Politics. And his assessment of China is a lot more pessimistic from the American perspective than that. He thinks that the Chinese, even if they don't seem like it, are going to be a lot more aggressive and they're going to be a lot more expansionist than what people think. It hasn't happened yet, but that's what offensive realism is all about. It's about that. He downplays the Russian threat and plays up the Chinese threat. Keone also says, I think there's a biological element to the Canadian dislike and distrust of Americans, the blood memory of their loyalist ancestors being forced out of the 13 colonies to live in exile in the frozen north. I've seen a lot of pretty strong emotions from some of our Canadian friends recently. But given what is being said to them, I'm not that surprised. I mean, a lot of Trump supporters, you know, have basically been like, quote unquote, joking about glassing their country, rolling over it, claiming that, you know, Canada would fold within minutes and it would be very easy for them to take. And, basically just kind of like raged, violent fantasies, basically, towards the Canadians. And my sense is that even though on paper it feels like it would be a walkover for the USA, in practice it may actually be a lot more difficult. Not just in terms of the, if the Canadians decided to dig in and it became like guerrilla warfare, Canada's huge. It's absolutely huge. And there's all sorts of mountains and difficult terrain up there. And it's cold as well. So it wouldn't be like that easy. But let's just pretend it was a cakewalk. Let's pretend they take the country in a matter of minutes, right, if it came to it. I think it would cost America a lot. I think any kind of semblance of the, you know, American world order or the international rules-based structure would dissolve overnight. And this is, I find, really fascinating because Mark Carney really doesn't have any cards. Like, he's got no cards. He's got no army. He's got hasn't got a leg to stand on, and yet he's made a fist of it, galvanized Canadians behind him. And, I think that would be like they may be able to take Canada in that sort of scenario, but I think like America would lose the world in that. Like they'd win Canada at the expense of the rest of the world. And I really do think it would be over as well if that happened. I mean, you can mock notions like soft power and all that sort of stuff, but I mean, the globalists don't have anything really. They don't really have much of a hand. And yet I think they've been quite impressive in the way that they've quote unquote stood up to Trump. And everybody keeps on saying, oh, well, it's nothing. It's irrelevant and all this sort of stuff. It's always shrugged off. I don't actually think that's the way things have gone at all, right? And don't forget, I am a skeptic of these things. I'm skeptical of NATO. I'm skeptical of, you know, our European elites and so on. But I actually think they've come out of this, including Starmer, better than they have any right to. Which makes me again think that this is according to the Brian Balletic plan. Because otherwise, why doesn't Trump just pull the cord? Or why doesn't Trump slap Starmer down? Or why does Trump basically do unforced cucks to Mark Carney? And it's ultimately because he may know that he can't, that these threats that he's giving are ultimately empty, that he has no intention of following through with them. Maybe Mark Carney knows that, I don't know. But they've come out of this better than they should have, in my opinion. If anything, Trump is strengthening them in each of their respective nations, which could be the idea, I don't know. I did see one 4D chess take that Trump actually wants Carney there for some reason or other. I don't believe that for a second, by the way. I don't think Trump thinks about these things at all. I just think he says, you know, he takes every situation as it comes and is short-term tactical on all things, in my view. I don't think there's some grand overarching vision. Other people disagree, of course. But I don't think that he is secretly trying to get Carney to win because, you know, this would empower elements within Canada who like America or whatever, you know. Alex Lamont says, AA, do you think there's a middle path for the UK between the larger political blocks of the US and the EU? If eventually Britons must choose one or the other, which would you say makes more sense in the long term? Well, you see, this is where I fundamentally disagree with many of our American friends who have the idea, and I've seen this repeated by more than one of them, that the future of the West is in America, that America is like Europe is dead on its ass in their view, okay, and is basically like on the road to becoming a caliphate or some Fox News bullshit that they've got in their minds. And actually, America is the great hope. The reality is that America is well on the path to being a majority-minority nation. America is 40% non-white. America has catastrophic issues, you know, much, much worse in all of its major cities than in even the worst of the European cities. Europe has got 750 million people there. Okay, it may have some demographic aging problems, but every country, including China, has got that issue. Okay. And its speed of demographic replacement is actually one less advanced than the American one. It's still over 90% white in most of Europe. And two, it's got a much stronger sense of its own history and sense of itself, right? Rome is still Rome, for example. So I think that the future survival of the European peoples is in Europe, and I've always thought that. And that ultimately, as per Yockey, as per Evola, as per many other base thinkers over time, the acid that has been spiritually killing Europe is basically what might be known as American-style materialism or Americanism. And that as soon as the boot is off the neck, Europe will rise once more. Question as to where Britain should position itself vis-a-vis that, it's hard to say because Britain has never really been part of that Europe that I'm discussing. It's, in fact, historically, Britain has always been a spanner in the works against the European hegemon arriving, unless you count like the Roman era. You know, Britain was part of the Roman Empire, of course. But I at the moment, I would lean towards a stronger Europe. I have a video coming out in a couple of days called something like The Best Defense Policy for Europe. And in fact, I mean, I support what's happening. I support Europe remilitarizing, getting a stronger army, you know, itself. And eventually what needs to happen is, and what would be great to happen, is if all of the Americans pull their soldiers out, and Europe is basically strong enough so it doesn't have to take any of this shit anymore. And I think a lot of the problems will sort themselves out. The Americans disagree. They think all of this shit, all of the mass immigration, all of the woke stuff, they think it comes from Europe. They think that Europe is left and that it is the bastion of right-wingness in the world. This is just fundamentally at odds with actual reality. The actual reality is that Europe lost World War II, had this liberal bullshit imposed on it by the Allied powers, specifically America, and the period of brownization of Europe has happened exclusively under the Pax Americana. All of this bullshit has happened under the Pax Americana, right? So Route 1, Occam's razor says, remove Pax Americana and a lot of this shit goes away. That's always been my view. Other people disagree. They've got their own reasons. That's my view. I'll give it to you straight, like a pear cider made from 100% pears. Anyway, let's carry on. Alex Lamont says, JP says, average tech Slack chat. Firestorm says, 189. Unrelated, but have you read Agony of Eros by Booying Chul Han? It has a somewhat leftist lilt to its analysis, but raises points about atomization and self-negation that are reminiscent of the Tao. I have not read it, Firestorm. I have been trying to read the basic texts of Hermeticism recently and not getting very far at all. I'm not very good at reading the old woo-woo, I'm afraid. I never get very far. Apart from the Tao, that's the only one I've been able to stick with. Mr. Ewe, 1985, says, I worked as a computer programmer for various government institutions, and saying military-grade security or CIA-grade security is a complete myth. Well, there we go. Well, why not just use Signal then, eh? Novotik says, as someone who didn't vote, this has been the most entertaining few months of any political standing of my life. Yeah, it has been quite fun, I suppose, hasn't it? $11 Cheese says, imagine Lavrov using an emoji. I know. Although I can imagine Medvedev doing all of that stuff, so swings and roundabouts. Enrico Palazzo says, AA is pro-cope for EBT, Palantir, and Raytheon. Well, I don't know what that means. What do you mean, pro-Coke? Pro-Coke? I don't know what that means. Broman Hank says, why do they need this much kayfabe? Can they just get on with it, for fuck's sake? Plate of slop. I know. Like, what is all this bullshit? I don't get it. It'd be nice to just like sort. I mean, this is why I've always said that in this country, the solution will come through Blair and Starmer, not through fucking Nigel Farage or Tories or populists or anyone on the right. Because anyone on the right comes with this bullshit. It's actually much more likely to come from the technical deep state than it is from this lot. Because you always just get this smoke and mirrors circus crap with it all. You know, I don't know if you've seen Reform's latest recruit, you know, only been going to like save the refugee events and so on. Yay! They're literally replacing Rupert Lowe with some liberal woman, basically. Sam153 says, is this a story that's made less interesting because everyone is interested in it? Cheers. Well, thank you very much, Sam153. It means so much. I don't know. Everybody is interested in it right now, but I can guarantee you in 2 weeks' time, nobody will ever mention it ever again. So, you know, this is it. It's like everything's ephemera. It's like the froth on top of your coffee or a firework that dissipates into the sky, never to be seen of again. Right? The overall effect of this is for Magatards to be like, yeah, Vance is my guy, he's based and so on. And for Libtards to be handbags at dawn. And for people like Nick Ferrari to say Europe should spend more money. That's basically the upshot of it all. JP says, the use of private devices to avoid archiving laws rather than publicly owned devices, same as the email Clintons. Sorry, same as the Clinton emails. They use private devices to avoid archiving laws. Yeah, that's a good point. Good point. The Zanik CO says purchasing the... Well, it doesn't make it any less amateur hour, though, does it? The Zanik CO says purchasing the Beer and Dairy block vote finally explains why grooming gangs were protected by Starmer years ago. This is kryptonite. Alas, the card cannot be played without a true opposition. Absolutely. That was a bit of an eye-opener, all that stuff about the Pakistani clan structure, wasn't it? Coney says, every Western leader who visits Jerusalem kissing the Wailing Wall, how about every Western politician who visits Rome kisses the Arch of Titus? Glorf Findel says, yes, the USA needs to pull out of foreign countries. Yeah, not a minute too soon. What are you waiting for then? Get out already. XJPR says, current analysis of Canadian electoral outcome. I think Carney's locked on. My sense is that Trump has won the election for Carney. And that Carney has cut some more pro-nativist promos than Trump has ever done. Right, I said to my buddy Black Horse, I said, Carney has acknowledged white Canadians precisely one more time than Donald Trump has ever acknowledged white Americans. Ubidar Vandel says, kind of funny, an evil wizard lich player not being into the school of woo. Ha ha. Well, I mean, it's not that I don't have a couple of woo levels, but I struggle. There's something in my brain that doesn't work well with the symbolism, you know. It's like, and in every culture, the tree was a sacred symbol. And I'm like, no shit, like there's trees, and that's because there's trees everywhere. Oh, and the sun is, sun is of a royal significance. And I'm like, yeah, that's because it's natural. People look up and look at the sun. So I can't get out of that kind of mindset of being like, you know, it's not like I'm not that overawed by the correspondences. It's like, oh yes, in every religion and culture, the cup has been like, there's always the cup. And I'm like, yeah, well, people have to drink, you know. It's not that kind of mind-boggling to me, you know. Rito Hayner says, honestly, the discussions about coffee, salted butter and Mr. Men are all more important than any of this nonsense. Yeah, you can say that again. You know, I've been getting into more obscure Mr. Men recently because I'm getting bored of reading the same ones to AAA all the time. So I recently acquired the Mr. Men Treasury Collection and the Magic Treasury Collection. Adam Hargreaves, who's Roger Hargreaves' son, has been writing those books since about 1989. So more or less, almost for 40 years. But he still keeps his dad's name on the front. And I've often wondered, like, does he just do that out of respect for his dad? Because he could easily just stick Adam Hargreaves. I don't think anybody would, like, not buy a Mr. Man book if it said Adam Hargreaves on the front, you know? So I kind of, I like that kind of touch of tradition that it's got about them. Daniel Hall says, try the 3-volume Thrice Greatest Hermes compiled by GRS Mead. the contemporary Hellenistic and Roman writings on hermetics and help you make sense of the Emerald Tablet and the Divine Parmander. Well, thanks, Daniel, but the problem is that I read these things and it doesn't go in. It doesn't go in. That's my problem. I can get, like, I can read geopolitics, elite theory, politics, economics, and it goes in and it stays. I read this stuff and it goes in one ear, out the other. Nothing sticks for me. Even Evola on the Hermetic tradition, I just can't, like, it doesn't stick. I'm always like that with, you know, and I don't like it. This is why I like the Tao. The Tao has no characters. It just kind of is, you know. This is why I even when I start reading bio, now I have to believe in this guy and that guy and this prophet and that prophet and this story and that story and, oh, this sacred people and that sacred people. And I fucking give up, you know. Seamus O'Blaine says, as well as Mia Cups, every culture has the taint. Well, indeed. Let's have a look to see if there's any other anything else here. I still don't get that pro-Cope comment. C123 says, Russia number one, Iran number one, USA, phooey. That's Iron Sheik, of course. Apparently, 2 Minutes Hate says Trump has just backed Mike Waltz. Well, of course he did. Of course he did. He'd never fire a man of Mike Waltz's background and character. Of course he wouldn't. Of course he wouldn't. Clarice Bodica says, are we well into Ride the Tiger territory when it comes to UK politics for the foreseeable? Oh, we've been in Ride the Tiger territory for a long time. But I also think that, like, I mean, I think America's basically in Ride the Tiger territory as well. If you think this Trump admin is going to solve America's problems, you've got another thing coming, I'm telling you. You know, literally three months of nothing but shit, back-to-back shit shows. And but all these people think America's saved all of a sudden. The underlying issues of America are still there. And as far as I can see, Trump has no interest in sorting them out whatsoever. He's never even addressed most of them. You know, when things started, I was like, right, who is right here? Is it this bunch of guys over here who are optimistic, or is it Devin Stack? By this point, I'm like, yeah, just it's Stack. Devin is right. He's been right on every single thing so far. And the other side just make predictions that don't come true. I remember, I'll give you one for free, and I've mentioned this before. When Trump announced this, when the ceasefire with Netanyahu was reached, okay, all of these people came on and said, you know, within 45 days, Netanyahu will be done. He'll be out of there. Did that happen? No, that did not happen. Netanyahu didn't go anywhere at all, and he restarted the war. So that didn't happen. I remember Pete Q, I mean, I love the guy, but he said, pay attention to who's winning. Well, I paid attention, Pete. I paid attention. And I've got the answer now. And at this point, if you haven't got the answer too, well, I don't know. I don't know what planet you live on. I don't know what planet you're living on. All right. I think that's up. Tuesday, FA Tuesday says, Trump is setting up Newsom to be a successor because he kind of hates Vance. This is why he's propping up Starmer and Carney. I would say that's a bit too far in advance for Trump to be thinking. Although I suspect that Newsom would beat Vance in any one-on-one. It's just about fundamentals and X factor. Vance hasn't got the X factor and Gavin Newsom does. That's basically what it boils down to. Newsom looks like he could be world champ. Vance, that, you know, intercontinental at best. Obide Vendal says, do you like Noita? Lots of alchemical symbolism. I have not looked into that, I'm afraid, Vandal. I have not looked into that. All right. I think that'll do, ladies and gentlemen. I think that'll do. And I will see you again tomorrow, where we'll be reviewing Adam Curtis. I'm trying to remember what my video is tomorrow. What is my video tomorrow? It's not, is Donald Trump a Time Lord? I can't wait until that one comes up. My video tomorrow is called The American Economic Boom is a Mirage. This is another thing I'm going to get into, right? All this stuff about Europause and American productivity and American, you know, the American Great Divergence, all fucking bollocks based on money printing. And I'll get more into that tomorrow as we talk about economics 101 once again. All right. See you tomorrow, all. Bye. Get out.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.